the whole subject now of public speaking and debating. Public speaking, something that people really hate. We're going to have this one pretty interactive. We've got tonight Just a Minute program, and we want volunteers for that. We're going to have Charles doing some radio interviews right here that you can phone in on and see how good you are at public speaking and debating and arguing on air in the cut and thrust of radio type ministry. When they've gone and done surveys amongst people, they've found that the thing that people fear the most is public speaking. In fact, according to the stats, if you believe these statistics, fear of public speaking exceeds fear of death. Which means that at the average funeral, the average person would prefer to be in the casket than the one giving the eulogy. Colossians 4 verse 6 says, your speech should always be pleasant and interesting, and you should know how to give the right answer to everyone. We are told to be ready. We should be ready to give the right answer to anyone, and we should know how to make our speech interesting and pleasant. Okay, here's three basic requirements for all public speaking. They may seem obvious, but there's a lot of public speakers who don't seem to have picked this up yet. Number one, have something worthwhile, important, and relevant to say. That should go without saying. But if you don't have something important, worthwhile, and relevant to say, the best thing is to say nothing. Number two, explain and illustrate what you say. You might state it, but it needs an explanation, it needs an illustration. You've got to think, what's the most appropriate illustration or explanation for this? Thirdly, you must know how to start and how and when to finish. The worst type of speaking is the person who's talking, and while he's talking, and he's been going a long time, he turns to the guest in the middle of the host, in the middle of the meeting, says, how long do I have? When am I meant to end? But I've got so much more material. The public speaker must get that right before he stands up. He's got to know. And if he looks at his watch, everyone in the audience is going to look at their watch. It is not appropriate, and it's very bad manners to be talking about your time while you're in the middle of it. Get that clear beforehand and aim everything towards that finish line. Just as in soccer, the goal is to get the ball into the net. You've got to have a goal in every public speaking. What is your goal? Do you want people to join your church? Do you want them to come forward and commit themselves to baptism? Do you want them to come forward and commit themselves to an evangelistic outreach team? Do you want them to commit to certain training? Do you want them to sign up for the Evangelism Explosion Clinic next week? Do you want them to take a hand in the education of children, to get involved in the Parents Teacher Association of their school? What do you want them to do? Do you want them to throw out the TV set to use it as target practice? You know, whatever is your goal, that's everything you say should be aimed towards that goal. What's your goal? And so the most important thing in any speaking is, what do I want the people to do? Now, on the basis of what I want them to do, or to think, or to say, I've got to aim all the material, the scriptures, everything has got to be aimed towards that line, right? So the first thing is, what's my goal? And I would say, even if you don't have full notes, write out your first sentence and write out your last sentence or paragraph. Your first and last words are the most important things. You've got to get them right, because first impressions last. And the last thing you say should actually be the final sum up what they must do about it. Right? So, have something worthwhile, important, relevant to say. Explain and illustrate what you say. Know how to start and how to finish. Your personal appearance, your cleanliness, your neatness, your clothing are an important part of your message. Your posture, your gestures, your eye contact, your facial expressions, the tone of your voice can either enhance or undermine your message. The amount of speakers that come and they've got plastic bags, some checkers, pick and pay type of plastic bag, and their notes and things are falling over, or they open the case and everything strewn all over the place. And you can't walk around with a piece of paper flying behind you. Have everything together. Have a backpack, have a briefcase, have something, a basket. But don't have plastic packets and bits and pieces of all kinds of nonsense there. The way you dress, whether you've shaved in the morning. Well, I mean, we're talking about the men here. And Everything about your appearance is most important. We'll tell you why. First of all, here's the laws of effective communication. There's 12 laws. Number one, appearance. Before you've said a word, before you've opened your mouth, the people have already made up a judgment of you to some degree. So, your appearance, your clothing, your grooming, your bearing, your accessories. Accessories meaning the bags, the books, the displays, the whatever you're carrying with you, your accessories. Now, all of it should enhance the message you're trying to give. If you've got a serious message, dress seriously. If you're going as a clown, well, dress as a clown. You know, the message should be enhanced by the appearance. So if you want to be a clown, dress like a youth leader. Right. Sorry, did I hit target somewhere? Your appearance is so important. Do you know, the trouble is our people dress down. I have seen top evangelist ministry leaders from America preaching in the cathedral in Louis, the most hallowed place in Sudan, the birthplace of Christianity in southern Sudan, with a baseball cap on inside the church the whole time. There is not a church in America that he'd do that in. But because he's in the field, he thought he could stand there with jeans and a t-shirt with a baseball cap and preach in the Louis Cathedral in Mundri County in southern Sudan. Unbelievable. And not only did he do that, but there's a video of it, which they sent around to all their supporters around the world. So it's not even that they did it. They're actually advertising that he was preaching like this with all the photographic evidence sent around. That's pretty bad. I've seen pastors coming into Sudan, Romania and so on, without even proper clothes. And we warned them. The Christians in Africa take clothing seriously. Dress properly. We need suits and ties for the men. We need dresses for the women. And the women will come in shorts. The men will come in t-shirts and jeans. And they won't be allowed in the pulpit. Most churches I know won't let them in. In fact, I've heard pastors saying, we can't hear you without the tie. Talking about Sunday services. It didn't matter if you came by motorbike or dugout canoe or crawl through a minefield. You better be able to pull out a suit out of your backpack. So your appearance is part of it, depending on the audience. Some audiences, that's important. Others, it's not, obviously. Posture, body language. If you are slouching, scratching yourself while you're talking. People do that. Arm movements, hand movement, gestures. You know, if you talk like an Italian, it's very distracting with hands all over the place. Eye contact. We can't just be into our notes with no eye contact on the people. There's got to be the visual handshake. You've got to connect to the people. And your facial expression sets the tone. I mean, some people are just a walking comedian act, and you can't take anything they say seriously, and they're enhancing that. You know, they're youth ministry people. Now, notice, the first 5 points here, we haven't even got to one verbal point, have we? This is visual. And visual is very, very important part of public speaking. Look, if you're on the radio, you can ignore all this. But if you are standing in front of a group, you need to be concerned about appearance and posture and gestures, eye contact, facial expressions. It's all part of your communication. Now we're getting into the verbal. Voice. The pitch. The volume. The inflection. The pace. How fast you speak. Or slow. The emphasis you might make. The voice is important. And again, we're not talking about what words you're using now. We're just talking about how the voice sounds. Can it be heard in the back row? When you're emphasizing a point, you're speaking slow. When you are racing through something, the people get the impression you're making, but you can't speak on a monotone, same tone, same inflection, same volume the whole way through. Unless you want to put the people to sleep. 7. Wasted, words, wasted, where people sort of speak around about the subject. Hello, hello, is somebody there? Do you hear me? I was listening to radio, and I was thinking, and I thought, I'd like to phone in. There's something I want to say, and the point I want to make is very important, and I think it's very important everybody hears this, because there I was thinking as I was listening to the radio, and I thought, you know, we really must address this issue because it's very important, you know. And it's interesting because I was thinking, and you know, the other day I was talking to my cousin and just, who cares? Say what you want to say. an amount of people who will come up with, in 1960, or was it 1950? And this was, no. What was his name again? It's irrelevant. Give the story, give the point. Who cares what the date was, what the name of the person was, whatever. If that's not relevant to the story, give the story. Give the important point. Communicate what you want communicated. Wasted words are terrible. And the worst wasted words of all is a speaker who stands up and says, oh, I've got so much to say today, but there's just not enough time. And if only we had more time, I could say so much more. And you know, there's so many more things. He's wasting time. If he would just, he could use that time to say more of what he has to say. And people can see if this man's well prepared, he's got a lot of material. It's not necessary to have, oh, if only I had more time. You just want to pull out something and start throwing it at the person. Then there's personal involvement. Sensitivity and relevance to the listener's needs. I've traveled all throughout Eastern Europe with my father-in-law, Bill Bethman, from Poland in the north to Albania in the south. And when I've heard him speak in countries like Romania, I've been amazed. I've sat there while he's talking and looked at the 1,600 people crammed into Second Baptist Church and the rapt attention and the absolute adoring, loving expression of these people, because he's invested decades of years of sacrifice and service to those people, and they know how he is coming in the worst times and all that he's done to them. They hang on every word because of how he served them. And I can't forget that, the impression. Because what we say is not so important as what we do. Now, when our words are backed up by our life, when we have sacrificed and served and we've gone out of our way and we've gone the second mile and we have really done what the scripture has commanded us to do, and we've sacrificed for the people we're talking to, well, then your words have got so much more weight and power and impact than somebody who just comes in, he's eloquent and he's good-looking and he's blow-dried and he's wearing his three-piece suit or whatever it is and so on. So personal involvement is more important than almost anything else we say or do. Humor. Sometimes humor is necessary to relax or to hold attention, but we've got to be careful. We can't overdo it. And how we handle questions. Let me say, I've been really impressed with Philip Stott, how he handles questions. I took him once, we organized many years back, for him to go and speak at University of Cape Town, University of Stellenbosch, and University of the Western Cape, Cape Technicon, and so on. So we organized the Western Cape tour. I went along, and there at every place, these were well-organized meetings, early 90s, before the universities realized you can't have creational scientists here because we can't answer them. But in each place, there was a professor, department head of geology, and all sorts of top lecturers in the university hierarchies who obviously were committed to evolution. And there they were standing, even with books, and you could see the whole lot, you know, at the back, talking amongst one another, the books, and they bring out their points, and sometimes they're even reading their argument against the creation position from some book. And there was Philip Stott standing up front, and normally, especially in summer, he'd kick off his shoes and sort of peel off his socks with his toes while he's talking, and he'd be there barefoot in a suit and walking around barefoot, flexing his toes. And when they would ask these questions, he'd be standing there rubbing his hands, smiling, saying, "I'm so glad you asked that question." And without notes, bam, 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 quoting their stats, answering. I don't know much science. I'm not a scientific person. I'm the kind of person who got 3 A's, geography, history, English, and 3 F's, science, maths, you know, Afrikaans. I mean, I'd just come straight from Rhodesia, so I didn't do too well in matric on Afrikaans, but had to do rewrites on that. Still, when the principal looked, he said, "All students are stronger either in the sciences or the arts, but I've never seen such a clear distinction." So I'm not a scientific person. And my poor children, when it comes to homeschooling, must get some extramural help from Avril when it comes to science, because, neither the mom nor the dad is particularly into science. But when I saw Philip Stott handling questions from hostile audiences and from hostile professors and heads of departments of geology and all that at university, then I knew this stuff is weighty, can stand in a hostile forum in the universities of our land. This can stand anywhere. So how we handle questions is key. If we're evasive, If we fumble the questions, we can destroy the whole presentation that's been given. So the question answer time is key. Visual aids, whether you're using overhead transparencies, whether you're using flip charts, slides, photos, whether you've got your little baby model of a 10-week-old baby after conception, and whatever you're trying to communicate, you've got to have your visual aids there, and sometimes they are very helpful. I was once on ETV debating some judge who was for gun-free South Africa, and at a key point I had a big A3 cover blow-up laminated of my Holocaust Rwanda book. I'd just come out of Rwanda, and at a key point when he was talking about the gun-free agenda and saying, has there ever been a country that's adopted the gun-free South Africa agenda? And I said, yes, Rwanda. And I, right in front of me, picked up this big thing so the camera couldn't avoid the picture. There it was, all a pile of skulls then outside Natarama Church, outside Kigali. And I said, Rwanda was a gun-free zone. And boy, did they want to get it. But the point was made, the visual aid was worth 1,000 words. If you've got your visual aids, it really helps. Whether it's your precious feet lapel pin during a pro-life debate, whether it's a little model baby that you've got. And Taryn's got some great model babies going right the way up, all sorts of sizes. Of course, those are less numerous and available, but we have these available too. And in conclusion, aim for your goal. What next? What must you do? What's your next step of action? These are just 12 laws of effective communication. 3 basic guidelines for speaking, all public speaking. Stand up to be seen, speak up to be heard, shut up to be appreciated. Standing up's important. Often we may like this. There's quite a thing now of sitting down, leaning, sitting on a desk. I mean, there's all kinds of modern Australian styles of communication. But casual doesn't always work. It's much better if we stand up. First of all, the people can see you better. You can see them better. And actually, you know, when you stand up, your lungs are more open. It's easier to project and speak louder. If you're speaking on a sitting position, you cannot project your voice as well as you can standing up. And it's so important to be heard. What's the point of communicating if you can't be heard? You must speak up to be heard. And of course, sit down, shut up when you're finished so that they can think about what you said. 4 things. Ho-hum. Why bring that up? For instance, so what? When you stand up to speak, you should think of these 4 reactions from the crowd. The first thing is, ho-hum. Wake me up. You've got to start a fire in the first sentence. What do you want to say? It has to be communicated. You would say, we are gathered here today to discuss the possible ramifications and dangers of smoking. Look, just tell them there were 47 coffins built in Franschhoek earlier this week, and by the end of the month, they'll all be filled with people who've died of tobacco-related diseases. Yeah. I mean, communicate what you want to say. If you speak on gambling, start off with, on Friday, Friday last week, the end of last month, 85 people at what's Grand Theft? Grand Theft, Grand West. Grand West Casino, 85 people left their cars, handed over the keys, signed over their vehicles, and walked out of the property. They'd gambled away everything they had with them, even their cars. Some cases they had to wake up their child in pajamas, sleeping in the backseat of the car, and carry them out the gate. They couldn't even call a taxi or a bus because it was too early in the morning, and because they had no money left, they'd gambled all away. You're talking about gambling, start with an example. You're talking about alcoholism. Well, speak out about, start off with the fact that most murders take place in or around a bottle store, a shebeen, a bar, and any place where alcohol is served. Most murders occur on Friday and Saturday evening. Most murderers are under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or both. Most victims of murder are under the influence of alcohol or drugs. That's a fact. That's the stats from SAPS. The overwhelming majority of victims of murders are drunk, and the overwhelming majority of perpetrators of murders are drunk, and most of the murders take place in and around shebeens and bars, and most murders take place Friday evening and Saturday night. It's a fact. Alcohol is the common denominator to, and you can go through it. Most people who drown are drunk. Most pedestrians and cyclists who are killed in motor vehicle accidents are under the influence of alcohol. Most train accidents are alcohol related. Most beatings of wives in homes, domestic violence, they like to call it, is alcohol related. You could just, if you want to speak about alcohol, list the stats. Start off with the examples. Give exact. You could pull out some newspaper cuttings from last week. There's always examples. Okay, that's the ho-hum. Number two. Why bring that up? What's the relevance for me? What's it got to do with me? Well, you may not be into alcohol, but what about some people you know, any other people in your family? Cigarette smoke, you may not think is going to bother you, but what about your children? Are they going to be involved in it? Why bring that up? What's the relevance for me? What can I do about it? And then, for instance, okay, give me some examples, some evidence. So you pull up the stats, you start giving the examples from the police and the Medical Association of South Africa stats and so on. And then the end will be, so what? What can I do about it? And then you tell them, you know, we want you to join the SA Temperance Society or whatever it is. So, communicating ideas, ho-hum, why bring that up, for instance, and so what? Listeners like stories. Stories are often remembered. The facts might be forgotten, but the stories are remembered. Listeners like examples, especially if they're examples from the lives or the lips of famous people. They like visual aids, like Jeremiah walking through town with a yoke. What have you got that on for? You're going to be under the yoke of Babylon. Building up something and burning it down. This is what's going to happen to Jerusalem. Tearing garments. The prophets used a lot of visual aids. You think of Isaiah and Jeremiah. Incredible. And Ezekiel. And listeners like clear structure and order and progression. Not all over the page. There's structure and progression. For example, Romans. Very logical book. Or Hebrews. Also logical, but in a different way. Hebrews is circular, whereas Romans is linear. The book of Hebrews in the Bible has one main point. Jesus is the greatest. He's greater than the prophets. He's greater than the high priest. He has a greater sacrifice. He has a greater temple. He has a greater altar. And everything is to show Jesus is the greatest. He's greater than Moses, greater than Abraham, greater than Melchizedek. Jesus is the greatest. So it's like a circle, and it's going round and round, taking the same point from different directions. Hebrews is a circular or Eastern way of thinking. Romans is Western, linear. Point one, subpoint A, B, C. Point two, subpoint A, B, C. Point three. And so Romans is very, very logical, linear. Hebrews is very circular. Both are ordered and structured and showing progression. Listeners like statistics if dramatized. You know, if you talk about 800,000 people are killed in Rwanda in 6 weeks with machetes, you could say one-third the population of Cape Town killed in Rwanda in 6 weeks. More Rwandans killed with machetes, pangas, than were killed with atomic weapons in all of history. Now, you can make your point by, don't just give the number. The number doesn't mean much. As Stalin said, the death of one person is a tragedy. The death of 1,000 or 1,000,000 is just a statistic. Listeners like examples that make history come alive show the relevance to us today, as we were doing over the Huguenot Monument just now, and listeners like speakers that keep to their time limit. Okay. Any questions on that before we get into specific debating skills? Questions, comments, complaints, criticisms, ideas? Yes. Any other questions?
You said that wasted words are a waste of time, obviously. But now, if you forget to your point, how would you cover up for that?
What do you do when you're losing? That's why notes are very helpful. There are times for any public speaker when something happens, for whatever reason, you suddenly go blank. Who am I? Where am I? What am I doing here? I mean, it happens. It happens to the best of us. Do you know that it happened to David Livingstone in his first sermon, went up to the pulpit, went totally blank and fled out the room. There's many cases of people who became great preachers later who just stalled. Martin Luther stalled at his first mass. You know, so yes, it happens. But if you've got notes, you can look down at your notes and just start somewhere. Maybe you're repeating yourself. But the thing is, yes, if you do get lost, that's where notes are very, very helpful. Structure helps. It's extremely frustrating when you're out there. Even if I've got to speak without notes, like you're on radio, or no, not radio, radio, welcome to have notes. On TV, you're not meant to have notes on TV. I'll still have my books next to me. I'll have notes, and all the way in their prep or during advert time, I'll be checking my notes just to refresh my mind, and then we bang, 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 go through all the different issues as needed. So I'll always have notes, whether it's note pocket. And let me say, it's so important that you have... You've got to have a small Bible that you can have in your pocket or your purse. If you're a lady, men should not carry purses. Notebooks. You want to have your notebooks, and you want to have a Bible with you at all times.
Glasses.
Sorry?
Glasses.
Glasses. Yeah. Yes, well, those of you who don't eat your carrots. And then? You want your notebook, you want your pen. And in my case, you want to have a red pen too, because there's some things where we're marking people's mistakes. So, notebooks, pens, pages, notes, it all helps. And it doesn't matter what, you go there prepared. If I go to a place and I've got the laptop and a video projector, there could be a power failure. The bulb could blow. The computer could crash. You've got to have your backup notes, because you can't trust electronics. This page is unlikely to... crash. And it's not dependent on Ishcom. So, I really recommend notes are important. Yes?
And the light, the torch, if the light should go out.
That's correct. If the light should go out, you should have torches with you. So, yeah, I mean, I have pens with me that can work underwater. And what's particularly helpful is this. I've got a torch that, I've been in a church with total blackout, there's no, absolutely no windows. Just pulled out my torch and I carried out preaching. This one, you can actually, it's got a magnet, and if you've got some metal around you, you can fix it there and carry on. So, some things like that are useful. If you're a public speaker, you don't suddenly want to have... Well, we've got to be prepared. You don't want to be one of these people. Does anyone have a torch? Does anyone have a knife? Does somebody have a pen? Has anybody got a Bible here? Does somebody have a clue? It's really bad. I mean, when a speaker doesn't have his knife, he doesn't have his Bible, he doesn't have a notebook, he doesn't have a pen. You shouldn't be dependent on people. That's why when I go to a place, you want to have your double adapters, you want to have extension leads, your own projector. Even a church says, we've got a video projector. You get to the video, to the church, yes, we've got a video projector, but our tech guy up there is going to control your slides. Well, we can't work like that. I'm not going to have a... And next, you want to be able to keep clicking through. You want to control it. So if he's got... Oh, yes, the one we've got hanging from the ceiling is controlled from back there. There's no way you can control from here. Say, fine, let me put up my own video projector. So as much as you can be independent, because the frustrations that come from... And you get to a place, extension lead. The man with the key is not here. The refrain, all over Africa you hear this. The man with the key is not here. There's always a key, it's always locked, and the man with the key is not here. He's outside. Okay, any other comments? Questions? Debating. That's the key thing. Let's get into debating. Okay, thorough preparation. Know your subject. Know the opponent's arguments. Think through the issues. Read. Now, the most important thing is, if you are dealing with the abortion issue, read Fight for Life. Or the chapter in Make a Difference. There's our big chapter on abortion and Fight for Life. If you're dealing with Islam, read the Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, Faith and Defiance, Sudan books. If you're dealing with politics, we've got South Africa, Renaissance or Reformation, Biblical Principles for Africa. If you're dealing with pornography, Finding Freedom from the Pornography Plague. If you're dealing with the perverts, the Pink Agenda. If you're dealing with any issue of Christian action, the MAD book, M-A-D, Make a Difference. Don't get mad, get even. The Make a Difference book has, it's a Christian action handbook. It has got chapters on everything that you can imagine, from pornography, homosexuality, death penalty, creation, evolution, written by Philip Stott, by the way, that chapter, gambling, mind, morals, movies, purity, true love, weights, education, euthanasia, right to life, abortion, all of that's in here. Half of the book is the issues. It looks at it biblically, looks at it legally, looks at it logically, answers their arguments, and so on. But then the second half of the book has got a whole lot of very helpful material on practical how-to, how to get into the press, how to write letters to the editor, how to organize a demonstration, how to do radio phone-in programs and debates, how to do public speaking, ideas for projects, how to start an action group. There's so many great things in the Make a Difference book, and you're all going to get one of these books tomorrow free as part of being here at the Christian Action Workshop. That you're going to get from Taryn. Make a Difference. Okay, so the MAD book is important, M-A-D. But if you've got your books, if you know, if you've read it, I'll tell you what happens frequently. Frequently, suddenly get somebody phoning in and saying, Peter, Radio SAFM wants you to debate the homosexuals now. Will you take the call? Well, sure, okay. Yeah. Pull a book, pull a Pink Agenda or Make a Difference out of the shelf while they're putting through the phone call. Yes, and you're on there and it's live. And I just turn to the chapter. It's that easy. Radio's great. People can't see you pulling out your notes and spreading a table with all your materials because radio is only an audio ministry. It's tremendous. And I've got it there and you can, my mind was 1,000 miles away. But suddenly you got the book and here you've got a decade of research packed into this book of how to argue. I was in Parliament back in 1995 for the subcommittee on health, the health portfolio thing. And Charles and I had to go there, and we were dealing with the whole right to life issue. And I was amazed. I had the draft copy of Fight for Life in my hand, and it had the answers to common pro-abortion arguments. And I just had the draft there, brought it along because I thought we might need this. I kid you not, not only did they ask every single question that was in that chapter, but they asked them in the same words and they asked them in the same order. Everything from overpopulation, unwanted babies, backstreet abortions, blah, blah, blah. It was all there. And there we had the answers, and he sort of, the notes were there. And we were just so eloquent and on target and everything, you would have sworn we had prior knowledge of what they were going to ask us. You know why? Because the humanists don't have many arguments, and their arguments are extremely repetitive. They're very unimaginative. There's already been research countering them all. You don't have to do that much research to be able to counter a pro-abortionist argument. That's why they don't debate us anymore. They know they haven't got a hope. They haven't got a prayer. I was in a debate with Dr. Death, Dr. Marge Dyer. She is the head of the Abortion Rights Action Group here in South Africa. And there we were at Stellenbosch University having this debate. And the only time I ever saw this witch smile, the most grumpy, angry person, probably has a grudge against her mother for not aborting her or something. I don't know what. So she's really angry. And the only time I've ever seen a smile was in this debate when I brought up the fact that my mother had been taking thalidomide tablets in 1959. I was born January 1960. And all the thalidomide babies were being born deformed. Thalidomide was tested on rabbits and other animals and had no ill effects. It was a anti-morning sickness tablet. It was meant to take away the morning sickness symptoms. And very popular in 1959, until they discovered, everyone being born had been from people taking thalidomide tablets was born deformed, like no arms, things like that. Extremely badly deformed. And in the horror of it, even South Africa was allowing abortions for thalidomide-taking mothers. And my mother had some miscarriages between my brother and I, and she did not want to have to give up this child. She certainly didn't want to have an abortion. So she called for a chaplain, and although she wasn't a believer at the time, she had a chaplain come to St. Joseph's Hospital, which is today Vincent Pilates and Pounds, and pray for an unborn baby, that he'd be healed, that he could be born healthy. And so I said, My mother was told to have an abortion, and at that point, you just saw Marge Dyer's face just light up with the biggest smile I'd ever seen, and she said audibly for everyone to hear, "What a pity she didn't." Could just think, she was thinking, "Oh, Peter Hammond aborted. Wow, wouldn't that have been great?" She was just absolutely ecstatic over the idea. And I think that won us the debate as well. Just showed they're not pro-choice at all. They're anti-life. They're pro-death. So that, there's the other things. Take your key books with you, even if you never open a book. But if you go blank, but also, you see at the back there, there's the Black Book of Communism doorstopper. When I've gone to Parliament to speak on gun control and so on, I've walked along there with a Black Book of Communism, stuck it on the table, and you can see all the parliamentarians around going, ah! They don't like that. They can see you've not only done your homework, you've got something to wave around. Now, I probably won't open the book in the whole submission, but you sort of wave it around sometimes, and it's just there. Sometimes you pat it or point to it. We've also got in the ASAIR office the doorstopper, 600-odd pager, U.S. Attorney General's report on Commission on Pornography. So when we were going on the anti-pornography thing, the publication task force, I would have this U.S. Attorney General's report and be waving it around and slamming on the desk and pointing to it. And you could see them all recoiling because they know there's a lot of research in there they don't want to come out. And that's why in any debate or hearing, it's so important to ask questions to your side. Because what happens is this. We've seen this happen. Where there's a debate on the go, and you know they often have studio audiences. And so, say you've got the ACDP debating the ANC. This has happened. Everyone in the ACDP side would be asking questions to Carl Niehaus, the horrible, hideous, grotesque, apostate Marxist who's meant to be the religious affairs guy on the ANC side. I've debated him a lot of times. Well, anyway, there's Carl Niehaus on the other side. And the ACDP guys are so angry about what he's saying, they'd all be directing their questions to him. And the ANC cadres, they know, they've been taught, they direct their questions to Carl Niehaus. So what happens? The debate's just a monologue from Carl Niehaus. Nobody's asking questions to Kenneth Meshew because all of his supporters are asking questions to Carl Niehaus thinking they're going to trip him up. They can't. Carl Niehaus is cleverer than most of them. He's a very good public speaker. He's extremely experienced, and you could just see he's beaming because every time they'd ask a question, he wouldn't necessarily answer the question, but he'd use the opportunity to say what he wanted to say. And so we've got to be clever, and if we're in an audience or on a radio phone, and we must direct our question to the pro-life side of the panel. We must, even if we're so angry by what that pagan said, and I'm going to trick him. You won't. Give the time to answer the question to your side, the person on your side of the panel. Yes, Natalie.
I'm sorry, I don't know what ACDP, can you...
African Christian Democratic Party, Sharon Dudley, who was here yesterday. She's ACDP. It's a Christian party here.
The
ANC. That stands for Abortion, Nepotism, and Communism. Sorry, Abortion, Nepotism, and Corruption. African National Congress. I'm sorry, so the ANC is the ruling party in this country. They're the incompetent, corrupt clerics who are destroying people. And they're chopping down a few million trees in the Western Cape. Did you have another question?
No, I just wanted to know what the abbreviation
is. Yes, sorry. We use a lot of abbreviations in our country. We're full of alphabet soup. Forgive us, we really overdo it. Yes. Yes.
You don't want to ask like a very stupid question that they've already answered already.
Well, what you want to do is give them the opportunity to bring up more of the evidence. I mean, Charles, what sort of examples do you have? Say you're up there in a debate on gun issues. What are the kind of questions? You've got a gun-free South Africa crowd there, and you're defending the right of self-defense. Now, somebody from your side's phoning in. What sort of questions should they ask you?
I want to ask you about, have you, in your mission work, ever seen the effects of gun-free zones?
Yes.
It's a logical question, it's an easy question, and something to give you time just to carry on with whatever else you want to bounce over to.
Yes, or you can ask people, why do you believe that gun-free zones would be dangerous? Why do you think that disarming the public is counterproductive? What would you advocate for combating crime? Well, what do we do about violence in the home? You bring up, doesn't matter what the question is, if you're directing it to your side, he should know his stuff and he should have his homework done, so that if you find that you are caught out and they ask a question which you really don't know how to answer, you bridge. What you do is you go onto the subject that you prepared for. You say what you want to say. The guys do it all the time. Carl Neas is the best at this. Doesn't matter what the question is, he tells them what he wants to say. Politicians virtually never answer the question. Now, we love to answer the question, but occasionally you're slightly off your field of competence. And so, if you're on a radio talk show or you're on a debate and you've got a limited time, you can't exactly say, well, I think you should rather invite so-and-so because he knows more about this than me. He's not there. You've got to say something relevant on the issue. Surely we can be relevant on this. Now, we've got these different things, Black Book Communism, Holocaust, Rwanda, thorough preparation, know your material, and go and hammer them. Now, open up your audience to receive your arguments. Be relaxed, be positive, positive. If you just go there like a whining, complaining, that doesn't inspire anything. Don't complain and whine about things. It's more important to be positive. Even if you've got to expose what's evil, do that, but go on to the solution. So we've got to ultimately be positive. We can't just be negative. That's why we are not anti-abortion as much as we are pro-life. Yeah. We are not just anti-pornography, we are pro-family. We're not anti-homosexual, we're pro-family. We put ourselves in a positive. They like to put themselves in a positive and us in a negative. They will say we're anti-choice. They're pro-choice. Pro-choice, rot. In China, there's no choice. One child, one family, and they have infanticide and forced sterilizations thereafter. What do you mean pro-choice? There's no pro-choice in China. The baby doesn't have a choice. Pro-choice? That's a lie. Babies don't choose to die. They speak about equal rights for women. You say, what about equal rights for unborn women? I mean, you've got to have your reply. You put yourself in the positive, put them in the negative. You guys are anti-life. We're pro-life. Why should I use their terminology? Okay, be relaxed, positive, confident, be cheerful. Identify with your audience. Don't be angry and berate your audience. That hardly helps. And what do you motivate for? It should be love for God and love for his people. Number three, admit your own weak points at the beginning. You've got weak points. Use his ammunition for him and leave him with nothing to attack you over. He might be, what's your weak points? You can say something like, if you're on the abortion case, what they're going to attack you on? You're a male. How dare you talk on the subject? You can start off by saying, I know I'm a man and we can't get pregnant and we're not exactly in this position. However, as the father of four children, and you can acknowledge your weak point, then if he repeats your weak point, your point might be, I'm not a scientist. However, these facts on creation seem quite obvious. When there's design, evidence of a designer. Whatever it is that he's going to throw at you, admit your weak point right up front. It's like you've just taken his ammunition away from him, and he'll be left there crying because he can't throw it at you. Number four, give your argument in the form of a story. For example, the Lord gave parables. The Old Testament stories are in the Bible because stories are easier to remember. Examples from history. The David versus Goliath story. Who can forget that? The Gideon and selecting his men and taking out the Amalekites. Think of Daniel and the lions. Then the stories in the Bible stay in your head. Noah's Ark. So you take examples from history, personal experience, recent events. I just love some of the things that some of our enemies have done. We've had some brilliant ones. There I was on ETV with Gunfree South Africa. And there was this judge from Gunfree South Africa. And he started off his argument saying, I got involved in Gunfree South Africa after the Bagecloof murders. He said it was horrible, horrible. He said, I had to deal with this case. And actually, he said, no firearm was actually used in the Bagecloof murder. They were suffocated in plastic bags, and it might have been actually more humane if they had been shot to fire. But I knew something had to be done about guns. Dead serious. This was what he was saying on the air. And I turned to him and said, I think you've just proved my point. More than half of the people murdered in this country every year are murdered by blunt and sharp instruments. Firearms aren't the only way people murder. In fact, Genghis Khan and Shaka Zulu managed to kill millions of people without firearms. if you got rid of farms, it wouldn't change the killing. In fact, in Rwanda, they managed to kill 800,000 people in 6 weeks with machetes. I fail to see how getting rid of guns is going to end crime, considering that criminals have this tendency not to obey the law, first and foremost, but there's all sorts of other weapons that can use to kill people as well. There was this other time I was debating one of these men, Peter Story. No, Alan Story, which was Peter Story's son. Alan Story of the Methodist Church is going to be South Africa representative on the big question. And you may think that I'm making this up, but we've got the video clip we can actually show you. It's absolutely extraordinary. On the show, I gave a whole lot of biblical quotes as to why Christians should be allowed to have weapons and how it wasn't wrong to have weapons to use in self-defense and defense of your family. If a thief breaks into your house at night so that he is struck and struck so that he dies, there's no guilt for his bloodshed. Exodus 22 and verse 2. And I quoted from 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 that a good man makes provision for the members of his own household, and if he doesn't, he is worse than an infidel and he's denied the faith. And Jesus said, if you don't have a sword, silly cloak and violence. So I went through these, Luke and so on, quoting different passages, Proverbs. And so the interviewer says, well, Alan, Peter's given a lot of verses from the Bible in support of his position. What verses from the Bible can you quote in support of gun-free South Africa's position? And Alan's story said, well, actually, there aren't any. He said, but not everything in the Bible is biblical. And started laughing. And he said, well, what I mean is not everything in the Bible is Christian. And I mean, people just collapsed in the middle after. And I turned and said, what kind of theology is this? And he shot himself in the foot, then he shot himself in the knee. And, you know, sometimes you can have your own opponents destroy their own arguments in front of you. But stories always work. Recent events can be very helpful. Okay, avoid sarcasm, scorn, and ridicule. Use your humor cautiously. There's a place for it, but don't overdo it. 5, tell the truth. Most important in a debate, be accurate, be honest. The truth will set you free. By the way, do you know that at the CIA in America, you enter into the CIA's HQ and they've got written on the floor, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. I don't know what the CIA knows about truth, but it shows that there must have been a Christian somewhere back in the beginning when they started it. Well, the truth will set you free. Be true to the scriptures. For example, abortion. What's the key thing you've got to say in abortion? The baby's a person. You know, when you have this, oh, I'm not ready to be a mother. You're already a mother. I don't want to bring the baby into the world. Baby's already in the world. Your womb is in the world. You just got to tell the truth. When they speak about the fetus, it's a person. Life begins at conception. And what is abortion? Abortion is murder. I mean, just tell the truth. They may not like it, but that's what you're there for. Radio. You get a lot of opportunities in radio. Shal and I have so many opportunities, and people phone in, and you can debate them on air. And you know, we endlessly are offering abortionists, evolutionists, pro-pornography characters and so on to come on the radio for a debate, and they never accept it. They've learned from the early days, they accepted, and they got hammered and destroyed, and they realized, ah, you can't debate creationists and so on, and they gave up. Now, remember the power of justice. What is it that you're after? After the right to life and liberty of the innocent, faith and freedom. Women need protection and respect. Pornography exploits people for profit. Look at the fruits. Look at the victim of humanism, the fruits of humanism and atheism, evolutionism, the deadly legacy of Darwin. There's a film out called Darwin's Deadly Legacy from D. James Kennedy's ministry, and he just shows the absolute holocaust that have come from Darwinian thinking, social Darwinianism. So let's be sure about that, that we know the justice arguments that we can use. A lot of it you've been getting during this week anyway, that kind of argument. Now, this was right in front of adult world. Here we were debating, and they were trying to argue free speech, and we were arguing that pornography is not speech, and it's an abuse of free speech because pornography degrades women. And we're speaking from the right point of view that women should be respected and protected. Pornography is exploitative. It's got nothing to do with freedom of speech. It's got everything to do with exploiting people made in the image of God for profit. And that's the point we got over, and it was even printed in August on the front page. Seize the initiative. In any debate, take control. Attack. Tell them what the Bible says. So often in a debate, we just respond. Our job isn't to sit there politely and wait for them to initiate. And you know, they come out with all these difficult things and we just, no, yes, I don't know. What good's that? If you're in a debate, tell the people what the Bible says. Launch into it. I was at the Rustenburg Church Conference in 1991. And the theme was towards a united Christian witness in a changing South Africa. This was on the TV. It was on the newspapers. It was big time focus. F.W. de Klerk had opened the whole thing. And you had everyone from Bishop Tutu through to Alan Busak. You had Frank Shikani, Archbishop Hurley. I mean, these are all the big names in the liberation theology movement. They're all there. And they had their agenda. And I had my agenda. My agenda was to speak up for the right to life of preborn babies and protection from pornography. And so I knew if we're going to bring out the statement, the Rustenburg Declaration, on towards a changing, a united Christian witness in a changing South Africa, I wanted to have that we uphold the right to life of preborn babies and the right to protect women and children from the abuse of pornography. And we had a few things like that phrased. Boy, did I ever get an explosive reaction. As I stood up at this one point and asked for suggestions, what should be in the Rustenburg Declaration, I stood up, I was in the front row, position yourself in the front row if you've got to make a point, hard to ignore you. We should have in this document, we uphold the right to life of preborn babies. That's as far as I got. And I was sworn at. There was cursing and swearing and F-words from these ministers with big crosses around their necks and so on. I mean, you'd have sworn I'd just commit the unforgivable sin. They were so furious. When we got to the anti-porn, I had the head of the Association of Evangelicals in South Africa stand up and say, if we want freedom from pornography, if we want freedom for the Bible, we've got to allow equal freedom for pornography. Now, that's the egalitarian argument Tim was sharing the other day, wasn't it? Exactly the same. Well, if you've got freedom from the Bible, you've got to allow the same freedom for pornography. It's not the same thing. I mean, really and truly. Does it mean, well, gee, if we can have water flowing in our pipes to taps, why can't we have sewage as well? Now, this kind of mentality of trying to put good and evil in the same batch is insane. Back with Ahmadinejad, how many people know Ahmadinejad? Know of Ahmadinejad? Right. He was the Muslim leader of the Islamic Propagation Center International. And Ahmadinejad was the number one Muslim author, the number one Muslim debater. He was the one who used to have debates. He got creamed by the American Campus Crusade Ministry leader, Josh McDowell, back in Durban. I saw that debate back in 1981 on was Jesus crucified, but he annihilated Jimmy Swaggart, who just tried a subjective my testimony born again thing and hadn't done his homework. And so today, Didat Ministry does not spread any of the copies of the Josh McDowell debate, but they do the Jimmy Swaggart debates. Well, we had debates with Didat too, and he had his cameras there filming. He's never distributed any films or tapes on our debates. Surprise, surprise. There's this one there where Ahmadinejad, he saw, we were part of a Great Commission course up there in the town. We'd gone through to Didat's Islamic Propagation Center, and he saw we were a mixed group, so he thought he could inject some racial animosity. So he started saying, "Kaffirs! Kaffirs! That's what the white people called the black people when they came to Africa. Kaffirs! Kaffirs!" And he carried on and on like this. We all sat there looking at one another thinking. So I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Didat, isn't kafir an Arabic word from the Quran? Isn't kafir what the Muslim slave traders called the black people when they came to Africa?" Boy, did he bounce off that subject so fast, he never came back. You've got to know your facts. You've got to know what these guys are saying. And they will try every kind of dirty trick and all kinds of nonsense. Now, this is one of our ways of doing debates in the media. On National Women's Day a few years ago, we had a rapist on trial outside the gates of Parliament set up there. And what we did was invite the press. We had a lot of press because there's a lot of media interest in the subject at the time. And we said, women don't need pious platitudes from politicians and meaningless public holidays. Women need respect and protection. Ban pornography, execute rapists. And we had a trial of a rapist and had a hanging in effigy there And this is Shaw being the chaplain counseling the guy before he went and got hung. We started a debate with the Pink Agenda book. We wanted to get the Pink Agenda out in the open, made known, that people could see in the light of day that they were trying to hijack our schools for homosexual recruitment centres and so on. And so the Pink Agenda, we started to get ready to publish 5.5 years ago. Christine McCafferty, the author and main researcher, and I worked on this project, and this book was called The Worst Homophobic Hate Speech Ever Printed Before It Was Even Released. No one had even read it yet, but by clairvoyance they knew. The head of the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project called for this book to be banned. Interesting, considering they said that all censorship was wrong before, but now suddenly they wanted censorship. They were saying that censorship is inherently immoral. Now they thought censorship was, in fact, excellent idea for this book that they hadn't read yet. Well, it wasn't long before we discovered that the guy in charge of the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project, Evan Clurston, was also on the Film and Publications Board. Ha! So there we were, at the Film and Publications Board, having this head of the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project calling for the book to be banned, banning it, and then praising himself for banning it. And anyway, we pointed this out, and we did win. We won every which way you could win. We got over 100 media interviews, including hours on TV and radio. We got hours, hundreds of hours in the media, literally, over this to get the message over, including on SATV, ETV. I mean, it was all over the place, in the Sunday Crimes and the Cape Crimes and all of them. And we managed to prove our point. They proved it for us. We were saying the homosexuals have an agenda and they're intolerant of dissent. And they proved they had an agenda and they were so intolerant of us. And so at the end, we had to thank them at our book launch for the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project and the Film and Publications Board, whose marketing of this book made possible its phenomenal success and the 4,000 copies sold. And we're so grateful. And if they could please take a look at my Greatest Century of Missions book, I'm sure there's something offensive in it, because we could sure use the publicity. Okay, so seize the initiative. Be logical. Proverbs is logical. Romans is logical. Hebrews is logical. Progression, sequence, be consistent, be consequent. Think of how Martin Luther seized the initiative. They were putting him on trial, and he sort of put the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, and the Emperor on trial. He was meant to be the one in the dock, but he seized the initiative in very few words. In less than a minute speech, he managed to lay foundations for Western civilization. Freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, freedom of association, covenantal authority. My conscience is captive to the word of God. It is unholy and unsafe to do anything against one's conscience. Here I stand, I can do no other, so help me God. Amen. I mean, brilliant, brilliant, seizing the initiative. And when we are involved, show the inconsistencies and the hypocrisy of the evolutionists, the abortionists, and the pornographers. Remember the power of justice. We've often gone to Parliament and had chances to debate these guys. One time, Charles and I were there, and we had Carl Niehaus trying to say, come, 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 Mr. Hammond. Cuba's a secular state. There's full religious freedom in Cuba. What's the problem with secular state? I'd say, well, it's interesting you mention that. I've got some news reports that came through just today about thousands of house church leaders being arrested in Cuba and house churches being closed throughout Cuba. Is this the kind of secular state freedom you want for us in South Africa? Well, Holland's a secular state. What's wrong with Holland? And I said, Holland has legalized pornography, legalized abortion, legalized euthanasia, even involuntary euthanasia, even when the family members haven't asked for euthanasia. The state has chosen to kill up to 1,000 people a year involuntarily through euthanasia in the hospitals. And now they're trying to bring the age of consent down to 12 years old for sex and even homosexual sex. And they've got legalized prostitution. Is that what you had in mind for our country? And after a while of giving him a few examples, he gave up and shut up. But which to see Carl Niehaus to keep quiet is actually a rare event indeed. One of the few times I ever saw him have nothing more to say. But you've got to know your homework. You've got to have your facts. Show the hypocrisy. Show what the consistency is. Aim for your goal. Expose the slavery and abuses of Islam and Sudan, if that's your goal. Compare what the Bible and the Quran says. Establish the authority of the Bible. The resurrection of Christ. The heritage of Christianity. Bring people to Christ. Seize the initiative. Aim for your goal. And what can they do about it? What is the practical action required? William Farrell, one of the greatest debaters of all time, he's the one who won whole cities to Christ. He won Bern, Neuchâtel, and Geneva to Christ by debating the papists, the bishops. He'd preach in the market square until the soldiers would come to stop him, and he would challenge the bishop to a debate, and the people would normally think this is a good idea, and so he put them in a corner. The bishop would have a debate with him, and he'd always win. I mean, he knew his Bible, he knew his facts, and at a key point, William Farrell would turn to the people and ask for a vote. And do you want to be Protestant or do you want to remain with Catholic superstition? And people would vote for Protestantism. And there were times when he literally beat up the bishop and threw him out and closed the doors, went up the pulpit and started to preach. I mean, this guy was a fighter. There was a time when they show you the fountain in Neuchâtel where the bishop tried to drown William Farrell, and he ended up punching up this bishop, and he got into the pulpit with blood all over his knuckles and over his clothes and preaching. He was not your average preacher, but he won cities to Christ by debate. Now, we don't have to quite be like that, but we need to seize the initiative and be bold. Make a Difference has got a lot of great things on debates, and you should see chapter 17 particularly on how to be involved in radio debates. Okay. That's all from that side. We need to have a few chairs up here. And Sean, maybe you could get ready for a radio interview. And we can have folks to phone in from where you are. And let's get a free-flowing argument debate. Any questions while we're getting sorted out? Sorry? Huh? How do you phone in? You stand up. And then you're recognized by Sean. Just to get the speaking skills going. Okay, so we need to be ready for debates. What subject would you like to tackle?
Abortion, pornography, guns?
Yeah, I'm going to start off with abortion.
Okay, Taryn, would you like to be a guest in the studio on abortion? Do we have someone who'd be willing to play the devil's advocate and be on the other side, who could give the pro-choice arguments? Will you? Okay, good. You come up as we'll have a totally unrealistic interview option where the pro-abortionist will ought to be in the studio and make points, or would you just like to phone in?
No, I'd phone in.
Well, do you want to sit in the studio or do you want to... Okay, good.
Welcome to Cells and Light this evening. It's great to be with you again as we discuss what the Bible has to say about contemporary issues. And it's wonderful to have Taryn Hodgson with us. Taryn is the National Coordinator of Africa Christian Action, and she has done great research on the issue of abortion and come before the Parliamentary Committee on Health just last week. Taryn, give us a little bit of insight into what happened at the committee meeting at Parliament that you spoke to.
Well, we had an opportunity to speak to the Parliamentary Subcommittee on the Abortion Amendment Act, and we were able to point out to them the absolute trauma that nurses are facing when they have to, when they're dealing with these women who want abortions, and when they actually have to perform abortions. It's so traumatic for them that most nurses actually refuse to do the procedure.
Well, were the parliamentarians quite open to what you were saying, or were they pretty negative?
Well, most of them could understand the trauma, and they could understand that the importance of freedom of choice, but they seem continually persuaded by the argument of these so-called backstreet abortions.
Is it true that when the abortion laws were passed in Parliament, that the parliamentarians of the African National Congress were actually toying and dancing around Parliament because of the laws that had been passed?
Yes, they actually were clapping and shouting and screaming and celebrating when the abortion laws were passed. In fact, a recent newspaper article on the 10th commemoration year of the legalization of abortion in South Africa called this commemoration a great celebration and victory for South Africa.
Isn't that incredible? Unbelievable. Let's open the lines and find out from our listeners what they think about this issue. If they've got any questions for Sharon, then you're welcome to join in the discussion. Do we have any callers? There, somebody's coming through right now. Who's that person? Thank you. Would you please, the lines are open, you may carry on.
Just want to ask a question on this letter.
Yes, well, that's why you're phoning in, isn't it?
I want to ask a question.
Thank you very much. Sharon, would you like to comment on this?
Two wrongs don't make a right. Abortion is the worst form of child abuse and the worst act of violence you can do to the most innocent human being of all, pre-born baby.
And we have another caller right now. Who's going to be the next one? Oh, they are. The lines are just lighting up here. There's so many. I don't know which one to choose. Hello, anybody out there? We are 40,000 listeners. Okay, right back there. Thank you very much. Women have the right to choose, Karen.
Well, what about the pre-born woman? You know, abortion actually makes a woman worse off than she was before. Two wrongs do not make a right.
Karen, you're very contentious. But let's take another caller right now, right at the back.
The
man up on team with the white jersey on.
Shouldn't we do something about that as well?
What about the street children, Taryn? These people kids are starving to death in the street. Surely they should have been aborted.
Every abortion stops a beating heart. You cannot. Abortion is murder. There's no way of getting around that.
All right. Well, maybe we have another cool job. Right from back there.
I try to find out what happens if you have a woman that comes from a very poor background that was raped. Now, obviously, she wouldn't want to have her child off the rapist because her whole life long it'll be a reminder of what happened
Thank
to her.
Thank you
and
very much.
And all kinds of things like that. So, first of all, she can't finance it, and then it's the trauma.
A major, major issue.
Rape is certainly a very difficult issue to deal with, and we need to have a lot of compassion for women in those situations. But that child could grow up to be the next president of South Africa. Every life is precious. God, and we must value what God values.
Dr. Hammond's on the line. Dr. Hammond.
I would say in the case of rape, the rapist should be the one aborted.
Thank
Execute
you.
The rapist.
Yes, right in the front, Anne-Marie.
But I've had an abortion and I don't regret it at all, and I didn't have any trauma or emotional damage.
No emotional trauma from abortion. Taryn, she seems to be very happy that she's had an abortion.
Well, I'm sure your child did have some. I had a lot of emotional trauma when it was killed. But, you know, sometimes only 10 years after the abortion do the effects really start to show. Most women who have had an abortion experience either suicidal tendencies, nightmares, severe depression. Many have ended up getting breast cancer. There are so many effects. In fact, over 100 effects of post-abortion syndrome have been
Well, thank you so much. It's really great having had you on our program this today. We are going to move on to another program on a different subject. And, I can hear the 40,000 listeners groaning away. New subject. Who'd like to come for another subject?
We need somebody like Jacques, who's tactful, who won't offend anybody.
Come on.
Jacques, come on, even if he doesn't know the subject.
Okay, we're going to talk about young people and relationships. Well, welcome to Salt and Light this evening. It's such a wonderful evening this evening here in Cape Town, South Africa. We have a great lineup talking about contemporary issues and what the Bible has to say about these contemporary issues. And we've got Hamish with us and Joab. Put on your 15-minute sign. And then we're going to just have such fun on the air because we're going to hear what you, the listeners, have to say about this issue.
Two or three girls already that have left school in pregnancy, and you think it's around about grade 11, grade 12. We've had girls leave school since grade 8 and grade 9. Girls leaving school and too ashamed to come back, and then denying that education is lost. They can't come back because their friends ridicule them. Is that what God wants for us?
That's quite incredible. Do you know if any of the girls have had abortions at your school?
Many of the girls, luckily, their family have said to me, you may not have an abortion, but others have actually gone away from their family and stepped away from the family and had the abortion. They're causing a division in families again.
Incredible. John, when you're dealing with this issue at your sort of level in the sport arena, is there any kind of pressure on people to be involved in illicit sex in the sport arena?
Well, not really, but one thing I just wanted to mention about that, as in quite, you say you don't have any girlfriends, so you don't go into relationships like that with women. because then I'm just not going to be sitting between us because I'm worried about you. What happens when you don't do reservations for women and stuff like that, especially in Cape Town, being the pin capital?
What you say about programs?
Really
is not coffees in Cape Town.
I'm wondering whether the lack of relationships with women in that sense would not lead to more homosexuality, especially with the trends in the
We found that kind of issue more prevalent in Port Alfred, but not in Cape Town. So, when we're dealing with these traumatized youth, what on earth do you say to them when they're saying they need to live out their life, they need to sow their wild oats? So, how does one deal with this?
Well, ask them what the perspective on life is. What is life? Is life, some people life is alcohol, other people life is sport, like which is in my case, and then other people probably be women and stuff like that. So it obviously depends on their background. That usually predetermines people's problems are.
Okay, well, both of you are men. Well, I hope you are. But this year, from some of the ladies that are going to phone in this evening. Yes, right in the back there. Please, go ahead.
If
you're on the air.
Let's go back to Christian principles. The thing is, we all say we do what the government tells, and the government says have safe sex, and sex is not safe. Even with use of a condom, you might be physically safe, but mentally you're not safe. Mentally, you will not be able to go back to school, even if you are not pregnant. You won't be able to go because you're mentally scarred. Let's look into the guide says you may only have sex once you're in marriage. If we're having sex once in a marriage, we wouldn't have the problem of abortion because the pregnancy.
Well, we have True Love Waits phoning in right now. Please, Jerusha Olsen and True Love Waits. Welcome to Salt and Light this evening. Welcome to Salt and Light.
Right, as True Love Waits, I'd like to commend your speakers for taking a stand on this topic that is very important for young people. And I would also like to encourage other young people to realize that there is a better lifestyle. And I'd like to ask them what they feel is the best kind of lifestyle.
What do you think is the best kind of lifestyle, John? No, please, everybody, this is just my position. They really do this.
Denial.
But what I don't understand is
why can't a young person that live their life and have their fun, and why doesn't the government, instead of providing like condoms, why don't they just provide everyone with contraceptives and stuff like that, which will prevent pregnancy at a young age?
Aren't they doing that already?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not a woman, sorry.
Oh, this is like another problem. You want them to do so.
Also, I was just saying earlier about, you know, the fact that let's have girlfriends so we can lower the chance of homosexual. Well, let me put it to you like this. If you are in a relationship with a girl, and every time your heart gets broken, you think you're going to go back for more?
Well, take that, my friend. Any more
girls? It took her.
Yes,
Darren.
Yeah.
Respect for you. Just waiting for you.
Hello, Tiny Hitty. It's so nice to have you with us this evening again.
I just wanted to say that I think it's really terrible about what's happening to our young people.
Well, Auntie Hitty, how do you honestly feel about this? Thank you very much, Auntie Hitty. Okay, we have another caller. Do we have another caller right now?
I believe the stuff you say about homosexuality is so...
And then a legitimate lifestyle. One of our callers, I don't believe people like this listen to our program, but either way, unbelievable. We're really getting around. Must have phoned from Australia. John, please tell us, is homosexuality a legitimate lifestyle?
He doesn't deserve to be a man.
One
thing about homosexuality is so bad is it shows the weakened side of a man, which makes him more like a woman. Do you understand? So for all you women out there, it's degrading for a man to be like a woman. So
put an insult on a woman.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much. Quiet. I've got a friend who, one of his colleagues at work was in a gay chap was involved in an accident at work, and he was in a coma for a couple of days, and he came around, he came out, and he forgot that he had been gay, so he was a real macho man for a couple of weeks, until he remembered that he was actually supposed to be gay, and then went back to the gay lifestyle. But anyway, here we have last call coming in. Thank you very much. Last call. All the way from Port Alfred. Were you listening on the internet?
I'm God's son, and I think God has the authority to tell what should be happening, what shouldn't happen. And God has given me that authority. And I speak not on my own understanding, but I speak what He told me.
Well, thank you very much. Any last comment from you, John?
What did God tell you?
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We've got a final comment from True Love Wex, who's on the line from KwaZulu-Natal.
So from what you were saying, are you saying we should never have sex? What's your limit? If 16 is wrong, when can we have sex?
Well, when are we allowed to have sex?
When you emotionally are ready for it.
Thank you very much, John.
When you're
ready. Sit still, please. Your shuffling is coming on the air.
I was once attending a talk about from your actual play, your company, and they were saying sex is a glue which combines us in marriage, and it is in marriage that we should be bound. If you're going to have sex with so many people, do you really want to be bound to people, to every little part?
I like our time's up right now. Thank you very much.
That's a radio station.
There's one thing I was mentioning.
I'm blushing enough. Hey, Charlie, you want to make some comments on what people should do and not do on the radio? Yeah, we've had quite a lot of fun already. We had a course on at our office at one time, and there was a radio program. It was one of these 5, 6, 7, these talk shows. And they're going to have a 45-minute show on abortion. So we got people to sit at all our phones in the office, and we controlled the whole 45 minutes. We just kept people phoning in from our office lines, just saying, you've got a couple of lines in the office, and we controlled the whole show. I don't remember there being a single pro-abortion phone call that came in. And obviously they don't know any different, you know, they're just fielding calls.
and every single call in the program was pro-life. We controlled 45 minutes of part-time airtime just by having people sitting on every phone in the office. So one can have a lot of fun on it. I mean, you could do that with your church youth group or have a whole bunch of friends that are ready. You know, you can just phone each other and say, hey, you know, on the local radio station, Randy Tigerwick is speaking about this. Get on with it right now. And we can even set up a little forum on the email where somebody sends an email and says, oh, by the way, I found out because tomorrow at 4 o'clock they're going to discuss this issue on Radio Port Alfred or whatever. And you all be ready and phone.
I actually live in Kent and not Port Alfred.
That's close enough. As we mentioned already, you've got to be very quick and precise in what you say. And they talk about sound bites, you know, little comments, as Peter's already mentioned, you know. Guns for a free South Africa, instead of using the word guns for South Africa. You don't want guns to be able to be free in South Africa, that sort of thing. And so, you know, abortion kills babies. Make that final statement. It's three words. They're going to catch you. They're not going to let you talk forever. And if you mumble, they'll switch you off straight away. You can ask questions to you. You can raise questions in a debate like that, but always do it to your side. You know, the person that's on your side on the radio, you can't see them. Phone in and say, you know, I'd like to ask Dr. Peter Hammond this question. And let them run with it. Great way to work. I mean, the funniest call we ever had was we were discussing firearm ownership. Or Mabel Tigerberg, and we had a lady phone in, and she said, hello, I just want to tell you people what happened to me. I was coming out of the shops, and I walked over to my car, and guess what? Somebody was sitting in my car, and was trying to steal my car. So I pulled up my gun. She said, pull up my gun, and then I thought to myself, if I shoot this oak, he's going to leave blood on my seat. So I said to him, hey, pal, if you want to steal somebody's car, then you can steal somebody else's car, okay? By this time, Peter and I were like rolling on the floor, laughing. We couldn't speak anymore. We were laughing so much. So we like, gotta get the guy in the electronics to put on music so that he can regain our composure. Oh, that's not the way to do it. I mean, she was really great. I never found out who she was. You can phone in, use a different name. You don't even have to use your own name. You know, it's like you can write letters to the editor and remain nameless, or use somebody, use a different name. They often want to know who you are, but they've all print a different name for you. If you like, we'll leave your name out or whatever. You can also do that. We had Lenora phoned in once.
Many times,
under her second name. So she used a second name, and she phoned in to say that she will never date a guy that hasn't got a firearm to protect her. You can just imagine what. She won't ever go after the guy, ever. She won't court a guy, anything like that, if he can't protect her properly. And so you can have lots of fun on the air, you know. I've got a friend that worked for Getaway magazine. He said that their own staff used to write provocative letters to the editor just to get the ball rolling. It was a bit boring, and people want to see exciting letters. So they made up their own letters in the office and printed it under different names to get the ball rolling so that things could start happening. And so there's lots of exciting things one can do. Any comments? Anybody else have experiences on the air that you thought were exciting or things that you heard that were quite strange or provocative? There's some people that actually have a ministry to phoning into pagan radio stations on anything, any topic, to give the Christian worldview on it, or the biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. And there's a chap in Tableview that does that.
Where do you find out what's going on?
Okay, generally what happens on the question is, how do you find out what's going on the radio? Normally they announce what's going to be happening in the next 4 or 5 hours. So if you're listening to a radio station, they'll say, by the way, at 9 o'clock this evening, Salt and Light's going to be on, Charles van Beek's going to be on, and he's going to be interviewing so-and-so on this topic. So a couple of hours gives you a couple of hours in advance of what's going on. You can also look up on the internet sites to see when their phone-in programs are. Lots of them have their full programs on the internet sites. And you can actually listen to us on our program worldwide
We'll give you the details on the 104 FM.
It's
radiotigerbird.com.
.co.za.
On the Christian Action website, it's got a link. That's right. Okay, so the key thing is, guys, be prepared, be linked. Make sure that if you want to be on the African Christian Action email list, that Taryn's got your details, and when you get the e-updates, if something's going on in South Africa of relevance, she'll let you know. And also, you should be on the e-letter, newsletter of Christians for Truth, and Jerusha or Shen can give you the details for True Love Waits email and for the Doctors for Life and Christians for Truth. Those three are also excellent. So if you can be on the right networks, mailing list, emailing list, sometimes check websites, upcoming events. If you're there, you'll be networked with what's on and what you need. More bodies, more phone calls, more letters to editor, petitions, whatever it is that Action is, we can be involved in. But radio phone and programs are tremendous. Just have your materials, you all get a Make a Difference book. That'll give you the essentials on most of these key issues. But the newsletters, the materials you're getting here, will help you get through most arguments or discussions on the radio. Just have those sound bites. You know, criminals prefer unarmed victims. Pornography and prostitution are two sides of the same coin. Pornography is a theory, rape is the practice. Means whatever point you want to make, you just wham, wham. Give them the sound bites, and it's very hard for them to edit you when you've got one sentence that just says the point. Yes.
Attending a debate like that, and then you have people on the other side making a lot of noise, booing you and encouraging their own in a very unruly manner. How do you handle that?
Yes.
A few years back, I was in a place where a paper was being delivered concerning the unconstitutionality of the states that practice Sharia in Nigeria, and I noticed that the Muslims there didn't really allow the people delivering the paper to make their points. They kept interrupting. And whenever any Muslim got up to say anything, they would clap and hail him, and they took over.
Yeah.
So how do you handle?
They're very good at that.
Yes.
That's a very important point. In fact, if we get a chance, I'd like to show some of the clips of some of our debates where just that happens. When the pagans are speaking, or the Muslims, or the abortionists, or the evolutionists, everyone's quiet and listening to life. The moment the Christians start to speak, there's all this interruptions and heckling and shouting, and it's just extraordinary. And you can just see, but the way how we respond to unfair treatment, by responding calmly and rationally and being fair, that'll also, and us not interrupting, but us being fair and rational, I think that's so important, that even if they mistreat us on air, the way we respond to it will also be seen by those who have eyes to see, or ears to hear in that case. Yes, Jerusha.
Just an interesting perspective is that when we started with True Love Waits, it was a very contentious issue. Like Peter says, I was on the Felicia show, and before I went on, I was fully prepped to be murdered on the show. And starting there was the first time that the media was actually on our side. And when it comes to True Love Waits, I've hardly ever, in the last 6 or 7 years, come across any media that ever goes against us. So if you do want to get involved in the AIDS awareness thing and abstinence and that, you will actually get huge media support. And that is such a great tool to bring in the gospel. And so this is something that I believe in every single religion. I was on a TV show where they had a representative of every known religion on earth. And they asked each one of them, what does your religion say about sex before marriage? Every one of them said it's wrong. So there's no argument on that side.
Excellent. So the other key thing is, most times if you're invited to be a speaker on a studio debate, whether it's radio or TV, normally you can bring guests. Now, what will normally happen is, I've been on the SATV and ETV debates quite a few times, like the big questions on. Now, they'll never tell you can bring guests, but you can. The other side will bring buses. I mean, Gumtree South Africa, the pro-abort Muslims, they all have busloads, literally driving, and all the guys being ushered, here's the seats. So the in-studio audience is there to intimidate you. And you might be there, and you don't have a friend in the studio. So you must always bring some friends. And what we normally do, because we're in Cape Town, and the debates are almost always in Joburg, we've got friends in Joburg we can contact and say, please, you know, rustle up a couple of rent a crowd. Well, the other side is rent a crowd. We have bring a friend. So what we must do is make sure we have some people there, and then they must speak up. And when they go for, okay, anyone's audience got something to say, they must be ready. They're only going to have a few seconds. They're not going to be given the chance to have a minute-long speech. They're going to, you know, a short comment, the walk around. But we mustn't be backward. The trouble is Christians are so polite, so quiet, so placid. We've got to get a bit more aggression in standing up and politely but firmly stating the case for the right to life of preborn, or whatever the issue is that we speak on that point. So, take some friends. They can't invite you to speak on a live TV debate or something like that without you being allowed to bring friends along as well. So, even if they don't say, you can bring some friends. Just bring them. They're not going to stop. They won't know that you weren't invited to bring them. But I've never found that they've stopped them, because they've got the stands. It's all ready for the in-studio guests who applaud when the neon lights are applauded and laugh when it says laugh. Okay, good. Time for us to go to supper. Who would like to close the prayer? Thanks, Ashley.
Okay,
I'm sure you want to say something.
I need to talk to Mari or Manny. Is someone by that name here to the chat?
Manny or Mari?
Yeah.
Well,
you?
If you couldn't write, you must write your names very clearly, because the certificate's going to say what you put on your form. So if your form is incomprehensible, it'll be an incomprehensible certificate. Okay.
Lord, thank you for the day we've had to study your word and your principles. We just pray that we will really take to heart those things that are from you, those things of your scripture, that we may apply them to our own lives and become better servants, better workers in this world, Lord, that we can show love and compassion to our neighbors while we instruct them in your truth, Father, to prepare them to be the people of your kingdom. Lord, we ask as we go out and have time in fellowship and refreshment, that you would ease our hearts and our minds. Lord, we're all tired and some of us are really ready to go home. That we would be able to just enjoy each other's company and the refreshment and the food that you provided for us. Lord, we also ask that you would be with Kaylin on his birthday. And this would just be a day that she could look back and remember it with joy. And that this next year would be filled with things from you, Lord, that she would grow into a woman who is after your own heart. We thank you for these things, Lord.
Amen. Right, I think there's special supper for tonight, as it's 4th of July, and we'll be singing the American National Anthem when we get back and all that sort of thing. So, let's try to be prompt for all that. Pardon? Oh, that's okay.